Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money? Still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Welcome to Radio Rental.
The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life.
All told by real people.
And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And cash offer. It is also true, though, that Josh is experienced in this market. He will size up your home. And if he thinks you can make even more money the traditional way, that's what he recently did for a client named Grayson. Within 2 weeks, they had even more money. That's what they'll do. Give Josh a call and see what he thinks, what the best strategy is for you and your home. Again, it's Josh and the team at Keller Williams Realty, 901-461-8147 or joshhasthebuyers.com. Harrington next, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show. We bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Welcome to Radio Rental.
The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My new podcast, Crimes Of, explores the forces behind some of the most unforgettable crimes in history. Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herndon deal. Chris Herndon joins us now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That, of course, is one of your favorites, Yeah, by Usher. Classic jock jam from T. Morant, lookalike Usher, born on this day. I don't know what day, but he's 47 years old today.
T. Morant is 47 years old today. Well, there you go.
No. Usher is 47 years old.
I'm sorry. How old's T. Morant? How old's T. Morant, Jeffrey?
I have no idea.
Usher is 47
they
years
like
today.
They look like each other.
Yeah. So there you go. Okay. Well, I appreciate that, Chris. I gather you talked to Drew yesterday about your Green Bay experience, so I won't ask you so much about that. We did have the news over the weekend, though, that Diane Keaton died, and I wondered, did you have any thoughts on Diane Keaton as an actress or any of the films that that she starred in particularly?
Yeah, you know, one of the things I sort of realized is that a lot of her most interesting stuff, or apparently most interesting stuff, I haven't seen, and it's hard to see. Like, you can, if you want to pay $4 to rent, you can find just about anything. Not a lot of things, but in terms of, like, available on streaming services you might have access to, like, Looking for Mr. Goodbar, not out there. Red's not out there. Shoot the Moon.
Really?
not out there. I think the things that she's probably most known for are obviously Annie Hall, which is a movie and a performance that like actually earns the way overused word iconic. That was like an iconic,
right?
You know, especially at the time, like Diane Keaton and Annie Hall, like was like, you know, a fashion icon in a way, and a style icon and a personality icon. And that Woody Allen movie, which I think she won Best Actress. I can't remember for that. And then, you know, supporting role, but she's Kay Corleone in the Godfather movies and delivers one of the great line readings of all time. It was an abortion, Michael. And then later on, you know, she ended up getting, when she was older, and sort of more comfortable comedy kind of movie, Something's Gotta Give, with her and Jack Nicholson and Nancy Meyers movie. It's a very varied career. She was actually, I think, in Hair on Broadway.
She was.
Early on. So, you know, long, varied career there.
I read various obituaries. She turned down the $50, $100, whatever bonus it was for Hair for appearing nude as part of that production. And then, I don't know, one of the things I read, and I just, whatever, I have no opinion on this because I haven't seen Looking for Mr. Goodbar, but various people said her performance in that was even better than in Annie Hall, but it is such a tough watch that it didn't, you know, about this woman who's going out there for one series of one-night stands. And so, I don't know, that it is. Have you ever seen Looking for Mr. Goodbar?
No, I was actually talking to that on the drive to or from Green Bay with my friend Addison, who's a big movie guy. And neither one of us have seen Looking for Mr. Goodbar. A little surprised I haven't seen that. There are some movies I get confused with each other because of the same time period, and there's some rough similarities. Always got Looking for Mr. Goodbar with Diane Keaton confused with Clute with Jane Fonda, which was around the same time. I have seen Clute. I have not seen Looking for Mr. Goodbar. And if it were available on something, some streaming site I was subscribed to, I'd probably watch it this week, but alas.
Also read that she'd never seen The Godfather because she didn't like her performance in it, and she thinks she looked like a stick in the 50s, whatever clothing. So
right.
So she never watched that. But anyway, yes, that look certainly iconic. All right, Grizzlies have two more preseason games left. I don't know. This is a broad question, Chris. What have we learned? We've learned a lot of things, and yet we haven't learned much because we don't have John, we don't have Jaren, and we don't have Zach Edey. And like, it's sort of been tough to sort of know what to put stock in watching this unfold.
Yeah, I'm averse to like the you know, everything's a lesson or whatever,
right.
But you know, I mean, it's all information that you gather and.
Right.
We are in the process of learning about players, you know, and that might be a years long process. And, yep. You know, I think Cedric Coward has been quite interesting to watch him and to think about not what he is, but what he could be, and sort of to see the ball of clay beginning to be sculpted. That's been interesting. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope has looked really good. You hope that continues into the regular season. I think it's been hard. I mean, you have a new head coach trying to put in, you know, his own style of play, but he's trying to do it without the fulcrums of the style, which would be John Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr., and I think, importantly, Zach Edey. And so there's, like, how much – it's always going to be a work in progress, but it's a work in progress without your primary tools. And so I don't reach many conclusions from that.
Right.
But what I do wonder about is the degree to which that's going to make the beginning of the regular season – a kind of extended preseason. So I don't look at what they're doing now and reach any conclusions about what they're going to be in January or February, but it makes me wonder about sort of the speed of the process going into the regular season.
A couple things about what you just said. One is, so you wrote a piece popped over the weekend about the Wings, in it, an interesting quote, an interesting discussion that you sort of launched into about what Cedric Coward could be. And Isolo at one point sort of, I think, talked about there's any number of things that he could be.
Right.
And it's sort of one of the, I don't know, what did you make of that? And
that Isolo, I mean, with these columns during the preseason, I'm just pulling from everything, right? And
yep.
So it's not like a column about the game before or whatever. Yeah. So there are different quotes taken from different places. So that quote is from training camp, actually. And I just sort of put it in my pocket to wait until, you know, I was writing about that subject. And he was musing in training camp and he said basically, like, the coaches and I have talked about it. You know, he sort of talked about it as an organizational thing. Like, you don't know exactly what someone is going to be necessarily. And with him, there's all kinds of different paths, you know, positionally in terms of where the emphasis is. As you know, is he more of a 3-and-D role player who's a lower usage guy? Is he a guy who like ends up having the ball more? It's more of an on-ball scorer. Is he a guy whose physicality allows him to be more of a rebounder, defender, you know, protect the rim kind of guy? Or, you know, there's just so many different ways it could go. And instead of just deciding on the front end, this is what this player will be, it's like they're working with the player to develop him over time, and we'll see where it goes. One of the interesting things about him is that there is such a range of possible with him.
Well, and of course, he may be something very different. He may be something very different, and of course will be, in his first year. And then he, you know, whatever, the offensive game could expand, like whatever. He had his own quote about that he wants to be all of these things. Is that what was the essence of that quote?
Yeah, he didn't make any boast about what he will be, but he didn't, and he wasn't like reacting to the Isolo quote, because right. His quote was after like the second game. So these are from, you know, a week apart or whatever. Yeah. He said, you know, the best players in the NBA are three-level scorers. And for people who don't know the lingo, that means at the rim, mid-range, and three-point shot. He said, the best players in the league are three-way scorers and two-way players, meaning offense and defense. And that's what I want to be, meaning all of the above. So even all of the above can take different forms, right? You can be a three-level scorer without being like the lead ball handler or whatever. Desmond Bane had grew into a three-level scorer for the Grizzlies, even though he was not the hub of the offense. And so I think all of that is there for Cedric Cowers. You're not going to look up in Thanksgiving and he's checked all those boxes. But I think what we've seen is that the raw physical capability, skill set, potential, mentality, like all the raw tools are super promising. Now, I think people should have patience about which way it heads and where and how soon it gets there. But I think I'm very impressed with what's possible with him.
Yeah, I was going to say, you are not, in terms of, are you more encouraged or optimistic? Again, whatever, ridiculous sample size. In terms of where you were on Cedric Cowers before we actually saw him play a game of basketball, and now, are you roughly the same place? Or are you more encouraged?
Yeah, yes. I would say roughly the same place, but I feel more solid about being in that place. I think his athleticism is highly functional. I don't think he's a Amen Thompson. I don't think he's like the very tippy-top tier. But even on the NBA court, as a rookie, you can see that his ability pops, and it pops in different ways. It's not just that he's like, you know, springier or whatever than Jalen Wells. I think it's more functional than like a Gigi Jackson is considered a good athlete. I think there's strength there. There's dexterity there. I think we've seen in the second, third game in the fourth quarter, when he's just sort of loosened up and started to play a little bit more playground, you can see him just be able to create on the fly and get into spaces and make plays. I think there's an awful lot to like there, but I think people should be careful not to assume it'll come too quickly, and also not to assume when like the flashes happen that there won't be regression.
And then the other thing from that piece that struck me that I want to talk to you about was discussion about Scottie Pippen Jr. and how he had a terrific playoff last year, and one, you know, and I know you've been bullish on what he could become. And yet, when you look at the crowd in the wing positions, it may be tougher for him to get the minutes than one might have imagined. But obviously, than one imagined heading into the offseason. They've accumulated so many wings. Thoughts on how tricky it might be him to carve out a role?
Yeah, I mean, he's only played one preseason game, and so that's not a lot to go on. But I think the context, you moved Desmond Bane out, which creates a lot of opportunity. But you also brought in Ty Jerome, who sort of fills that secondary creator role that they asked Desmond Bane to play a lot last season. You bring in Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, I think everyone thinks will actually be the starting scoring guard, which was Desmond Bane's role. And you also bring Cedric Cowers, who's the upside guy sort of looking in the background of everything. And so I think Pippen is going to be in the rotation and going to have an important role in the rotation. But, like, when John Morant misses a game, who's going to start a point guard? It seems like it's going to be Ty Jerome, not Scottie Pippen. When they get into the fourth quarter of a tight game and Isolo is trying to make a decision between offense and defense and who he wants to be on the floor around Morant, if he wants to lean into offense, that might be more Ty Jerome. If he wants to lean into defense, it might be more Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. But I do think there's an opportunity for Pippen, and I point this out, because he can check both boxes a little bit. In terms of the Venn diagram overlap between the perimeter players who give you ball handling and shooting and the perimeter players who give you defense, Pippen is the most overlap of these guys.
In terms of things we've seen that are promising from the preseason so far, you put Cedric Coward's, you know, functional athleticism, whatever. We discussed that. Are the other two that you might identify as, well, that's been good, the play of KCP, but also, and you wrote about this in this piece that most recently dropped in the Daily Memphian, the uptick in the play of Jalen Wells.
Yeah, Wells was obviously good coming out of his rookie season.
Right.
I would use the word solid again. I think my positive feeling about Wells has gotten a little bit more solid based on the preseason. Again, he's played three games. The stuff I talked about some of the on-ball creation he flashed, that was really only one game. That was only one of the three. He didn't do that as much in the other two. But even seeing a little bit of it in that one game, I think was good to see. I do think he looks a little bit stronger. You know, the three-point shooting, you know, is up and down game to game, as you would expect, but I don't see anything that makes me think he's not going to be a meaningful three-point shooter. And just the maturity, the composure, you're reminded all over again, both watching him on the floor and talking to him after a game. So, I think the ultimately best version of the Grizzlies in this era, if there's another, you know, 55-win playoff advancement version, it's going to have Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Jalen Wells as the starters. No, I think that combo is a placeholder. But I think it's a solid placeholder, and it wouldn't surprise me if Wells, you know, stayed in that mix in some combination. Maybe that's with Cedric Howard, maybe that's with somebody else, you know, in the near future. But I think Wells is either a quality starter or certainly a quality rotation player. Looks like a very, very safe bet.
Chris, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. How about you, Jeffrey, in terms of – it's been really hard. Like, this has not been a preseason's preseason, man. You know, this has not been, if you were looking though to this preseason to create momentum for the franchise, this has not been that, largely because Ja's been hurt, you know, like that happened. And then there's no Jaren and there's no Zach Edey. So you have to look, you got to sort through it a little bit. Are you discouraged by anything, or is there anything that you are, in fact, particularly encouraged by?
No, I mean, I'm not discouraged.
There's no reason to be discouraged because Ja's not playing.
As Chris pointed out yesterday, I think, the Cavs went winless in the preseason, and
right.
Like their offensive numbers were horrible.
Right.
And they had one of the best offenses in the league. They were close to leading the league in wins. So, no. I feel like I've been pretty bullish on KCP, and I feel like...
You were bullish on the win total.
Yeah.
You're starting to soften there.
Well, I didn't know that... I don't know. Ja's ankle. I'm still bullish on the win total.
Right.
If Ja's healthy, but that's, you know, that's the if.
Jessica Benson will join Jason and John. Talk more Grizz. Coming up. All right, we got to take a break. We're going to come back, talk to Fishman, our man in Washington, D.C., although he's in Milwaukee right now. We'll talk to him when we return. It's Jeff Gawkins Show on a Tuesday, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Welcome to Radio Rental.
The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My new podcast, Crimes Of, explores the forces behind some of the most unforgettable crimes in history. Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
He's not actually our man in Washington, D.C. today. As a big baseball guy, he's in Milwaukee. How they feeling in Milwaukee, Charles?
Well, I got to say, when I arrived here yesterday at 3:30 Milwaukee time, which happens to also be Memphis time, the place was buzzing. The Southwest flight attendants were talking about it. I asked to change my room from one king bed to two queen beds, and the woman just laughed at me and said, there's no rooms left in this hotel because of the baseball game. And then, whatever, I'm in a hotel that has a quote-unquote, you know, appetizer and happy hour from 5 to 7, just swarmed with people. I think they went to the game, and I think I watched part of the game. I got to say, baseball in person is one thing. Baseball on TV, despite all the new rules, really does kind of creep along. And I don't think they're happy this morning, and I know Los Angeles is
the bad guys
favored.
Won. Bad guys won. Thrilling games. But
the bad guys. Come on, you've been doing this a long time. LA is not bad guys.
No, 100% they're the bad guys. LA is bad guys. They have a giant ass payroll. They try to buy their way to championships. Jeffrey, can we not agree that they're the bad guys?
They're going and getting a bunch of Japanese players, and they're just saying we're paying deferred salaries.
Hundred percent.
You guys get 13.5 hours to talk about all this crap during the week, and I get
it's not crap. Can you believe that, Jeffrey?
It's life or death. Playoff baseball, baby.
He just dismissed the rest of our lives, our livelihoods, the way we've both made a living.
No, I didn't dismiss it. I'm like, let's use
fine. You want to talk about something important like peace in the Middle East.
I'm the least educated economist in the world.
Yeah, okay,
but
fine.
I think you ought to use your time very
You didn't even major in economics. You didn't even major in economics. You majored in social studies, and you barely got out of Harvard. You barely got out of Harvard. Let's be honest.
I barely got out of Harvard.
You barely escaped.
Failed German.
You don't even blow. If you don't show your daughter your transcript.
Failed German. Even Jeffrey Wright knows that I failed German. That's sad. That is sad.
Okay, moving on. Moving on.
Go ahead.
You have to say, like, it was emotional to watch these scenes of the reunions, both as the hostages were returned, the 20 remaining living hostages were returned to Israel, and as so many Palestinian prisoners were released. I saw that, like, the most clicked story at the New York Times was video of the reunions, and that was certainly an emotional day.
I mean, I think we ought to just say Donald Trump really pressured Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu into finding and accepting, I think peace may be too strong a word, but a ceasefire, an end of hostilities agreement. And the Arab countries, based on some really wonderful reporting from my favorite news source, the Wall Street Journal, really pressured Hamas. They said, you guys are done. You have no support among us, your quote-unquote Arab supporters. You have 5 days to decide whether you're going to take this deal that President Trump has put on the table or not. But if you don't take it, we will no longer support your efforts. So that's not much of a choice, actually. But Hamas is the Palestinian terror group that rules Gaza or has ruled Gaza. They've been decimated. So President Trump did, and Steve Witkoff, his envoy to the Middle East, have done remarkable work, really arm twisting these two combatants into acknowledging that there's nothing more to be gained on either side. The Israelis have completely demolished Gaza and completely demolished Hamas as an organization. And Hamas did what it did on October 7th, that appalling attack, which has led 2 years later to the complete destruction of the place where Palestinians, one of the places where Palestinians have lived. But no one expected this kind of agreement at this moment. And the return of the hostages was really remarkable. And it's worth saying that it's ugly, but the hostages were the leverage that Hamas had over Israel in any negotiation about anything. We've still got Israelis who are alive. If you want them, you need to acknowledge us as a participant, as a legitimate participant in these conversations. Now they have no hostages. And so,
well, and obviously this is a, I mean, what has happened over the last, you know, beginning with the initial attack, is what has happened has been horrific from a human level. And you hope that this is
absolutely
peace. The challenge is that Hamas now wants a complete Israeli withdrawal, and Israel wants Hamas to disarm, and it is unclear that either of those will do that. And so one imagines,
right,
given the history of that we have here, that this is awfully fragile and could well collapse.
Peace is a different thing than a stopping of hostilities and a stopping of the killing. In fact, the Israelis killed 6 Palestinians this morning in some kind of incident, to be honest, the details of which I did not plunge into. But the pause in hostilities literally lasted 48 hours. Now, there's also supposed to be an international force deployed of actual soldiers from other countries deployed to Gaza to keep the peace. There's a very sketchy, thin plan to begin rebuilding Gaza and rebuilding the economy and the society. Everything's been destroyed. If you have kids, how do they go to school? Where do you get your food? Water systems, electricity systems, just plain old buildings. So it wouldn't be nice. It's essential for all that to get underway. And the Israelis were cheering yesterday. The war has been devastating to Gaza and also devastating to Israeli political and the society of Israel, because Israel is very divided. So I think the Israelis would like to return to an era of no armed hostilities. It'll be interesting to see whether it happens. So Donald Trump declared that it was the most important day in history. And it could turn out to be, although that seems a little extraordinary given, you know, World War II and stuff like that. But
still, a great day.
But the history, it's a great day, but the history here, it will take as much work as has already been put in times 10 to move things forward. So anyway, but it is absolutely worth acknowledging this was a hugely important day. And let's hope that the Israelis and the Palestinians, the Israelis and the Gazans can build on it.
All right. You want to do a Taylor Swift update. I do not endorse this, but I'm willing to have you give me the Taylor Swift update.
I don't know if you saw this.
I did.
But
set a new record. Set a new record. Set a new record. That one?
Yeah. Yeah. Taylor Swift, in the first 7 days of the album Life of a Showgirl, sold more albums than any musician or musical group of any kind has ever sold in a week, in an opening week. 4,002,000 albums. 4,002,000. That includes digital versions of the album and actual hard copy versions. She sold 1 million hard copies. 1 million people bought physical versions of the album, either on old-fashioned records or on
different, whole
CD.
Different styles, yeah, different types.
Do you remember? I bet you Jeffrey knows who the previous record holder for the most album sales in a week was. It was Adele.
No, I did
with
not
the
know
album
that.
20, the album 25 in 2011. So this is a 14-year-old record. Taylor Swift has had 15 albums reach number one on the Billboard chart. No one has had more albums reach number one except the Beatles. The Beatles are at 19. Seems possible that Taylor Swift will produce four more albums. I have purchased the, this is the real update. I have, in fact, purchased the album. I got it from Apple for $4.99, which seemed crazy. Like, something must be wrong. Cheap. How come this only costs $4.99?
Can't you just listen to it on Spotify? I listen to it on Spotify.
Not can.
It. I listen to a song. That
right. That. You can. Spotify is a little ditch in our family. Some people have Spotify.
Yeah, we don't need to discuss your Spotify. Anyway, okay. Yeah,
I can't listen to it without listening to it. $4.99 seemed like a good price. I've listened to it probably 10 times.
Did you ever read the totally savage review of it that I sent you?
I did not.
Well, you should. I found it. I don't know. Like,
illuminating.
It was illuminating of why some are savaging her. Like, savaging
it. Some say it's a juvenile performance.
Not nearly worthy, but I don't really know. A lot of people, like Lexi and you, both love it. Okay, moving on. Amazon.
Lexi gave it, on the 1 to 10 scale, Lexi gave it 1,000.
Right.
I think that seems high.
It seems high.
It's a totally listenable album. And I'm enjoying listening to it. That's what I would say.
Amazon news. Yes.
This seems really, really good. We said last week, it's yet another update. But last week we said seasonal hiring for the holidays was very cautious. And the big companies weren't announcing these, you know, Target hiring 200,000 people from now till Christmas to help out in Target stores. No Target's hiring strategically and mostly giving existing employees more hours. And that seemed to be a cautious signal about what's happening with the economy. Yesterday, Amazon announced that this year, again, it will hire 250,000 people from October 1st to January 1st. What are they doing? They're moving packages for our Christmas. That's we don't have that many 8-year-old listeners. That's Santa right there. Amazon is Santa. And 250,000 people is the same number of people they have hired each of the last 2 years, so they're not scaling back. So I think that's good. That's a good sign. Amazon said it expects a modest increase in its Christmas seasonal sales this year, whereas the big employment firm, Challenger Grand Christmas, said they expected seasonal hiring to drop. So that's good.
It's interesting, Charles. I really don't know what to make of the economy. On the one hand, it seems like, you know, the stock market, it's been roiled recently because of the back and forth China stuff, but the stock market has fundamentally gone up. On the other hand, inflation, by the way, is not maybe what the Fed would ideally like, but it's certainly much better than it was 2 years ago or whatever. And yet the job hiring numbers aren't great, evidently. There was a new piece I read today about a new term called job hugging, where people are just clinging ferociously as opposed to jumping from job to job like
just
we saw post-COVID.
Jobs, right.
Yeah, they're hugging
right.
their current jobs. I saw a story in Politico which talked about how Donald Trump's polling on the economy, his handling of the economy has absolutely plunged. A lot of the expenditures that have been over the last 2 years have been among the wealthy. The wealthy are spending like there's, you know, whatever, as lavishly as they ever had.
They're spending like their stock market.
Right, it's gone up. But then the people who are not invested in the stock market, they're having a hell of a time. Housing is sort of stuck. I don't know what to make of it all. And maybe in that way, I'm like your favorite Fed chairman, who also doesn't quite know what to make of it. What the hell are we to think about? And by the way, while Trump's numbers on handling the economy have absolutely plunged, and the Republicans are still more trusted on handling the economy than Democrats. So I don't know what to make of any of it, I'll be honest.
Right. Well, that's the state you just described it. That's the state of the economy. The growth of the economy, the gross domestic product, GDP, is relatively stable and relatively strong. It's in the 2 to 3% range, which for an economy the size of the United States of America is perfectly good. That's good. It's not, a recession means the economy's shrinking, and our economy is not just growing, it's growing strongly. Consumers are continuing to spend. 70% of the U.S. economy is consumer spending. You may think, well, of course, that's who, what would an economy be composed of except people buying things? And 30% is things like business investments in equipment and stuff like that, and exports. In China, the numbers are exactly flipped. 30 to 40% of the entire Chinese economy is consumer spending, and 60 to 70% is for exports and investments. So a consumer economy is not presumed. But what that means is if consumers get cautious, the economy immediately fades, deflates. Consumers say they're nervous, but we keep spending. So, and some of that's coming from rich people. But even middle income and lower income people are continuing to spend. Inflation has stabilized. It's stabilized at a point no one's happy with, between 2% and 3%, when you want it to be 2% or lower. I will say I went to the grocery store to do a big shop before I left town for my wife, and boy, I just felt like things were expensive. And that's purely anecdotal, but as you know, I'm very careful about prices. The big way of describing the U.S. economy is anxiety, uncertainty. Business people and consumers want to know what's going to happen next. Target's not hiring for Christmas. They're giving extra hours to their existing employees. Does that mean Target's nervous? Should I be nervous about my job as the manager of children's clothing at a Target in Tulsa, Oklahoma? That's the question. And that uncertainty is dramatically magnified by the way Donald Trump manages the economy. Tariffs on, tariffs off, tariffs on, tariffs off. Tariffs used as a political tool rather than an economic tool. The economics of the tariffs don't make any sense. All you have to do is look at American soybean farmers who are used to selling, whatever, half their crop to China. The tariffs have meant that China is literally buying no soybeans, and American soybean farmers are in a panic about what's going to happen to their crop. So that kind of uncertainty for business people, for car makers, for people who make computers and computer chips, that leads to caution. Caution means I'm not going to spend $1 million expanding my plant if I don't know what the market for my product is going to be. So I think the economy is cautious, nervous. Cautious is too timid. There's certainly anxiety. But meanwhile, people are continuing to go about their work, and people are not being fired. The jobs market isn't great, but people aren't being fired. So in all that, there's reason for a sense of
The only people being fired is forward. Certain federal workers are being fired or laid off now. Where are we on that? What week is this? Week two
it's
now?
Day 14. It's amazing. Yeah. I didn't even put it on the list of things we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Because as we both know, no one even notices that the federal government is shut down. It's day 14, and you're being gracious, but I predicted that we wouldn't go this far. I predicted that there would be an agreement to reopen the government and work on these health insurance subsidies, which are so vital to people being able to afford health insurance, which is the reason they can afford health care. There was just a recent study that something like 80,000 Americans a year declare bankruptcy because of medical debt, because they can't pay bills from their own health care or a family member's health care.
What's interesting here
is that
Republicans seem to actually go ahead. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Hang on.
Go ahead.
Hang on. In the UK, in France, in Germany, you know how many people declare health care bankruptcy? Zero. Zero. The idea that you would have to give up all your financial security and assets because you owe a hospital $7,000 or $10,000 or $20,000 because your child had appendicitis, that's crazy. And so the healthcare system is seriously broken. I was certain they would find a way of coming to an agreement. Interestingly, Donald Trump wants to pay soldiers. I don't know why the military should be paid, but the weather forecasters and the air traffic controllers shouldn't be paid. But no one should be paid during a shutdown, or everyone should be paid. That's how I view it. But right now, there's no agreement. The last shutdown was also a Donald Trump presidency shutdown, and it lasted 31 days. We're more than 2 weeks away from 31 days. So we may be talking on day 21 next week. And well,
the point I was going to make was, my understanding is there's a growing sense among Republicans that they actually don't want this health benefits to be cut off because it's going to hurt a lot of their constituents. And so, weirdly enough, if Democrats succeed in getting these health benefits restored or continued,
extended.
Right. It's going to make people feel like everything's fine when the midterms come along. Like, it's an interesting, like, there does seem to be a recognition on the part of a lot of Republicans that, my God, we don't really want our constituents to get notices that saying your health care costs are going to double, which is what's happening now. You're starting to get these things sent out. And so it does
people
feel
on October 1st started getting their health insurance renewal notices, and those notices assume that the tax credits for health insurance premiums expire, and so people are seeing their family health insurance go from $400 a month to $1,200 a month, and they can't afford
that's
it.
That's not a popular thing. I'm just going to tell you, going from $400 to $1,200, that's not going to make people happy.
For the same insurance, 57% of the people who benefit from those subsidies, 57% of them live in congressional districts represented by Republicans. So, yes, in fact, there's 70 to 80% of Americans think these premium subsidies should be extended. And Republicans say you can't re-engineer the entire healthcare economy under the gun while the government's shut. Well, the Republicans have had a lot of time to fix health care. The Democrats have had a lot of time to fix health care. We never do. We have a screwed up health care economy. But anyway, it'll be interesting to see how
see what happens next week. Jeffrey, do you think we're going to have
a winning position
next week at this time, Jeffrey? Are we going to, we do Jeffrey's bets. Are we going to still be a shutdown?
I'm going to say no. Oh, no. I'm going to say we'll still be shut down.
We still will be shut down. Yes, he says a shutdown. Groundhog Day here on the Jeff Crocker Show.
Three items we need to get to quickly. Let's move on.
Okay.
I'm moving on.
What do you want to move on to? I had given up hope of getting to all three. Go ahead. What do you want to hit?
Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of Defense, put in place new rules on reporters who report about the Department of Defense and the Pentagon that go into effect today. The rules say that reporters have to sign a pledge that they will not use in their stories any information that is not authorized and released by the Pentagon officially.
That is literally anti-First Amendment media. It's just unbelievable.
That is the old Soviet Union. That's North Korea. That's not the First
Only
Amendment.
Only official
report
news.
The Second Amendment. The First Amendment is first for a reason. If you don't sign the new quote-unquote agreement, you have by 5 o'clock today, 4 o'clock Memphis time, you have 24 hours to turn in your Pentagon pass. And here's who has signed the agreement. One America News Network has signed. That's a tiny little 12-person reporting outfit that never had a Pentagon reporting pass until whatever, a year ago. Who hasn't signed? Newsmax, a right-leaning organization, Washington Times, the New York Times, the AP, the Washington Post, CNN,
Fox,
the Atlantic, the Wall Street Journal, NPR, Reuters. None of these places will sign. The one place that has not announced what it's doing is Fox News. You know what? The Pentagon spends $1 trillion of U.S. money a year. That's $3 billion a day. That's $100 million an hour. We need to know how that money's spent, how the members of the Department of Defense, the Army, the Navy, the Marines, the Air Force, the Coast Guard, how those people are treated, whether our money and our defense is well-oriented, and you don't get that through official channels. That's not what you get. You always get the good news. And so this is ridiculous, and they're all going to pull out, but they're not going to stop writing about the Department of Defense. Pete Hegseth said when he took over that it would be the most transparent Department of Defense in history. That's not how you do this. This morning or last night, he posted on Hegseth a reply to the resistance to these ridiculous rules. His reply was just the hand-waving emoji. Bye-bye.
Cutter or Sequarium?
Well, let's do
Sequarium. Let's do Flipper. I want to know about Flipper.
Let's do Flipper.
I watched Flipper in my youth.
I watched Flipper too. Flipper was filmed in part at one of the first "quote unquote" sophisticated water parks in America, the Sequarium, just on an island on the way to Key Biscayne in Miami, Florida. The Sequarium was like a miniature version of SeaWorld, but it opened in 1955. And I think the original goal was to entertain people by showing what marine mammals like sea lions and dolphins like Flipper and eventually killer whales, orcas, could do, which is they have huge brains. They can do anything you ask them to do except drive a car. And also to try and light up people to the possibilities of the oceans and taking care of the oceans. There was always a conservation ethic. You know, it closed on Sunday. The Sequarium in Miami, Florida closed on Sunday forever. As it happens, the land is owned by the county, by Miami-Dade County. But the Sequarium had really fallen, you know, into disrepair and disrepute in the last
Well, the whole industry has.
Years.
The whole industry has. Did you hear about this marine park in Niagara Falls that is threatening to euthanize 30 beluga whales unless they get federal assistance? It's a closed park. They've got 30 beluga whales hanging around, and they're like, I mean, it's literally like, you know, give us the money or we're going to kill them. Like, that's what's happening here. Ever since Free Willy, it's kind of got a we kind of ripped the cover off of this.
I think, that's actually a sign of progress. A killer whale should not be that has
it's a
range.
Beluga. This is a beluga whale. I think it's different.
Miles.
Right.
Well,
exactly.
Beluga whales are the same. None right. of these whales circle within a 200-foot space for their whole lives. You know what I mean?
Right. No. I get it.
And so this
it's not humane.
This is dramatic progress.
And we gotta go. That means Jeffrey started the music before we even said goodbye. Hang up on him.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free, so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Welcome to Radio Rental.
The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, we're Corinne Vienne and Sabrina Deanna Roga here to introduce our newest podcast, Crimes of, a Crime House original.
Crimes of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, from crimes of the paranormal, unsolved murders, and more. Our first season is Crimes of Infamy, the true crime stories behind Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.